The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. Here is the rundown. President Biden, Russian President Putin met in Geneva. They talked. They left. They didn't agree on much. We don't really know what happened. The press conferences are interesting. I will play a little bit more for you afterwards. But the headlines are in the Wall Street Journal that they discussed prickly issues. In the New York Times, they expressed desire for better relations. In the Washington Post, Biden's strategy of pessimism ekes out progress with Putin. Well, you know, I go along with what Dick Cheney told me on this show in 2013 or 14. Putin, he's KGB. It struck me the first time I saw him. It's never changed, and certainly his conduct over the years support that. He was a colonel in the KGB, the Soviet secret police. That's what he was and will be, I think, forever. That was Vice President Cheney to me in 2014. That's all you need to know. It's all that anyone really needs to know. He's a KGB colonel. Other news yesterday, the Fed has signaled that the first rate rise will come in 2023. Markets reacted poorly. The Dow was down 265 points. The S&P was off 22. The NASDAQ dropped 33. And overseas this morning, it's all down. What do they think? Interest rates are going to stay zero forever? So that's 2023. Look for a quarter point rise. The Wall Street Journal headline, global markets retreat as Fed see earlier interest rate rises. And the Washington Post, Fed estimates inflation will grow faster than projected just 3 months ago. That's not news either, but it's a big headline. In the Wall Street Journal, U.S. housing market needs 5.5 million more units. Anyone who's trying to buy a house knows that. In Texas, Governor Abbott says he will build a wall along the state's border with Mexico. GM has raised its electric car bet and will add more battery factories. I wonder if they're going to do a deal with Lordstown Motors. They own Lordstown Motors until they sold it to Lordstown Motors. So we'll see if that comes back again. Symbol RIDE, R-I-D-E, had a nice bump again yesterday. I own that. I like that. From the Wall Street Journal, in Netflix world, movie studios make more movies than ever. Is that a good thing? Well, we won't know for a while. Congress votes overwhelmingly to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. The day commemorates the end of slavery in Texas in 1865. It's been a 15-year fight for this. I think it's a good idea. It costs a little bit, but given the trillions that we are spending daily, it's not really a very significant amount of money. So a new federal holiday. Candidates clashed in New York City's future, in New York City over the future of it. Very few highlights in this debate. There are eight candidates. They'll get down to two. No one significantly damaged Eric Adams, according to the New York Times. He's the front runner. The candidates sparred again over policing. Andrew Wang is the great progressive hope who is fading. Housing and mental illness were dominant topics. That really means homelessness. The worst idea from a competitor may have come from Diane Morales, but you have to wait and see what people do behind the secrecy of a ballot box. Abroad, Benjamin Netanyahu, this is a quote from a headline in the Times of Israel, a column by David Horowitz. Netanyahu's not going anywhere, and Bennett's helping him stick around. At the start of what will be a relentless fight to protect his coalition against a predecessor who is treating him despicably, the new PM is already radiating weakness. He's been prime minister for 3 days, and he's radiating weakness. In a parliamentary system, that's really the sound of doom. In the Telegraph, Great Britain today, return of holidays abroad for people who are fully vaccinated appears imminent. Double jab tourists could be allowed to travel to amberless countries without quarantining under new government plans. All of the United Kingdom exhales. They don't really consider the summer in Great Britain unless they go to an island and get horribly sunburned. Hong Kong, bad news. The police invoke security of law to arrest senior journalist at Apple Daily, Jimmy Lai's newspaper. At least 100 police raided its office on Thursday as the crackdown continues. Now let's grab a couple of quotes from Joe Biden yesterday. President Biden on the tarmac talking about, well, me, my interview with Mitch McConnell from Monday. Cut number 18.
Mitch has been nothing but no for a long time. And I'm sure he means exactly what he says, but we'll see.
Yeah, of course he does. He was talking to me, Mr. President. Vladimir Putin on his philosophy of life. Cut number 19.
Oh, there is no happiness in life. There's only a mirage of it on the horizon. So, you know, cherish that.
Like Dwayne to post that in the studio and as the byline of the rundown. Let's play that again because it's Vladimir Putin on life.
Oh, there is no happiness in life. There's only a mirage of it on the horizon. So, you know, cherish that.
Mrs. Putin must have loved that one. I think there's a lot of happiness in life. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt provides most of it. God, family, and the United States of America. Maybe not for Vladimir Putin, but anyway, let's go back to the president. President Biden snapping at CNN's Caitlin Collins. Cut number 2.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change his behavior. What do you do all the time? I said what will change their behavior is if the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
You don't understand that. You're in your own business.
It's a summit with China.
You don't understand that, you're in the wrong business. Now, we used to get outraged howls about press freedom, and rightly so, when President Trump said that the media was the enemy of the people. But insulting Caitlin Collins, who's doing her job and doing it well, Mr. President, come on. He came out and apologized later, but you can't get that back. Play that again. This is, first he snaps at, then he insults Caitlin Collins. And I'll tell you what I think this means in just a second. Cut number 12.
Confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President.
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change his behavior. What do you do all the time?
So
when did I say I was confident?
I said
let's get it straight. I said what will change their behavior is if the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
You don't understand that. You're in your own business.
It's a summit with China.
You know what? What the hell do you do all day? He says, if you don't understand that, you're in the wrong business. Joe Biden on the press. Here is the president confusing Trump and Putin and himself. Cut number 1.
United States to ensure that Iran does not acquire nuclear weapons. We agreed to work together there because as much as interest, Russia's interest is ours. And so how we can ensure the Arctic remains a region of cooperation rather than conflict. I caught part of President's Putin's press conference, and he talked about the need for us to be able to have some kind of modus operandi.
I think President Trump may be living rent-free in somebody's head. Here is Tom Cotton on Fox commenting on what went on yesterday. Cut 17.
Yeah, Sandra, I think it was summed up best by the French president, Emmanuel Macron, a couple days ago when he said of Joe Biden, it's nice to have a president who's part of the club again. That's the real problem, is that Joe Biden seems to care more about being part of the club with a bunch of foreign leaders and international bureaucrats rather than standing up for America's jobs and prosperity and our freedoms.
All right, now I want to go quickly to cut 27 because this was the fatal flaw of yesterday.
Another area we spent a great deal of time on was cyber and cybersecurity. I talked about the proposition that certain critical infrastructure should be off limits to attack, period. by cyber or any other means. I gave them a list. If I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, 16 specific entities, 16 defined as critical infrastructure under U.S. policy.
I sure hope I'm on that list. I hope the Hugh Hewitt Show is one of the 16. I don't much care about Dwayne's after show, but if the Hugh Hewitt Show isn't on that 16 and we're open to Russian attack, that's really something. If you're not on that list of 16, it's an invitation to the Russians to attack you. Stay tuned, America. That was The Rundown. I'm Hugh Hewitt. More coming up. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. I'm joined this morning by Senator Roger Marshall, also Dr. Roger Marshall, Senator from Kansas. Good morning, Dr. Senator. How are you?
Hugh, good morning. Bonjour. I like that. That's good today.
I've got to take care of my listening audience north of the border, and I always say bonjour, hi. Senator, let me ask you about, you're on appropriations. I want to get to the infrastructure bill, but before I do, let me start with the Putin-Biden meeting yesterday. What was your reaction to the whole, the beginning, the middle, the end of it?
Well, it was just a bad look for America, unfortunately, Hugh. You know, the president walked in there a point of weakness. He had just given the Russian dictator Nord Stream an energy pipeline. So our allies are helping our enemies in that situation. And then we gave him, 45 minutes of airtime, a world stage with no American standing there beside him saying, wait, you can't say what you're saying. Basically, he used Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's talking points to compare America to terrorists and thugs. So it was a bad look for America, just a bad, bad picture.
All right, now let's go to the appropriation. Are you part of the 10, the gang of 10, or the 10 Republicans? They're different. The gang of 10 is 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats, and there are 10 Republicans who've signed on to the so-called bipartisan $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. Have you signed on already?
I have not signed on. I'm still concerned about the fine print, how we're going to pay for it. Look, infrastructure is wildly popular. Everybody in America could say, here's something that we need to do from an infrastructure standpoint. And I agree, but it's always, what do we prioritize and how are we going to pay for it? I want to reappropriate dollars from the previous COVID relief packages, the trillions of dollars that President Biden is borrowing from your grandchildren, from my grandchildren. And I think we're not there yet. So we need to figure out how we're going to pay for it.
Now, Senator, here's my number one question. Do we get a guarantee if there is a bipartisan compromise, whether it's $900 billion or $1.2 trillion, whatever it is, if there is a compromise, does that include a guarantee that there will be no reconciliation spending? Because it seems to me crazy to negotiate against ourselves if Chuck Schumer and the Democrats are simply going to go out and jam through reconciliation everything they leave on the table in the so-called compromise.
No, reconciliation. Chuck is going to make a run at it. He's already making a run at it. I know those conversations are happening. So that will happen. And Hugh, just to push back, and this would be one thought I would give you. If we can take out the meaningful, most important priorities of the infrastructure projects out of that reconciliation bill, I think he's going to have a harder time, not have as much leverage on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who I got to tell you are standing tall, keeping to their word that they're not interested in doing anything on a partisan basis.
Now, Senator, I think they are doing a great thing on the filibuster, but I don't expect them to be able to hold the line. And indeed, it would require only one or two Republicans to bolt on reconciliation if there's something that they offer them. I honestly, unless you get a promise, why in the world would we do a bipartisan bill if they can flank us? I mean, without a promise from Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema. If you got a promise, that would be fine with me. But if you don't get a promise, that alarms me.
Well, I going from the other direction, if we don't do an infrastructure, we will lose some moderate Republicans, possibly. I think that our moderate Republicans will stay fast if we can work out a bipartisan infrastructure plan. But the whole point here is, look, the Senate, bipartisan senators could get this job done, but somebody behind the curtain in the White House is keeping us from making any progress on it. This will be now the third legislation, really bipartisan opportunity the president will have turned down. And I say the president, the president seems to agree when these folks, senators, walk out of these meetings, but then his staff cancels it. So I think that's where the onus is. Why does the president not want to do a bipartisan infrastructure bill?
I will move on, but when you next get together with the conference, please say, look, I'm a skeptic. I'd like to play the hood. We don't get fooled again, that we end up with the same amount that we would have started with had they just done reconciliation. So, Senator, Leader McConnell was on this program Monday, and heads exploded everywhere because he said simply that the same approach would apply to 2024 as applied in 2016 to Supreme Court vacancies. Did you agree with the leader's comments?
Boy, I did not see the leader's comments on that, Hugh. Can you tell me a little bit more?
Yeah, he said if there's a vacancy in 2024 and Republicans have the majority, there will be no hearings and no votes on it.
Well, we'll do everything we can to confirm conservative judges on the Supreme Court. I can tell you that. And Leader McConnell's done a great job in the past, so I'd want to sit down with him. He's very shrewd, one of the best four-dimensional chess players I've ever seen. So I'd want to circle back and kind of listen to his logic there.
All right. That would just be the Scalia precedent, and he just reaffirmed it, but I'll be interested to know if it comes up in the caucus. Let me turn now to Taiwan, Senator. I'm asking almost every single elected official, have they been to Taiwan? Do they plan on going to Taiwan? Because Taiwan is in the crosshairs of the Chinese Communist Party. Have you been there before, Doctor?
I have not been to Taiwan. Probably my closest relationship was I was the district governor from Rotary when our international president was from Taiwan, and certainly was impressed with him and the Rotarians from Taiwan I met. I've just been in Congress now 4 years and a brand new senator. It is on our list. We're looking at a trip possibly this fall or winter to get there. And certainly we've sat down with the Taiwan ambassador and had discussions specifically about semiconductor production. Obviously, they're one of the world's largest semiconductor producers, and they're working on a project in Arizona now.
And my concern, of course, and Senator Cotton has articulated, as has former Secretary of State Pompeo, is that after the Winter Olympics in 2022, and we're going to come back to whether or not we ought to be going to that, they will invade as Vladimir Putin invaded Crimea after the 2014 Winter Olympics. The policy of strategic ambiguity, for the benefit of the audience, protects the Chinese Communist Party right now. We have agreed to defend Taiwan, but not explicitly. Ought we to make that guarantee explicit, Senator?
Well, Hugh, that's a tough question, but the whole point here is that we're in a position of weakness. The president of the United States was the vice president when Russia invaded Crimea. There was no consequences. We reward Iran and Hamas for being bad players. So we need to be looking at this whole thing geopolitically, putting all these pieces together. You can never look at Taiwan by itself. It's a very important part of the strategic plan. We're going to have to be stronger. Look, we don't want World War III, but we do need to keep standing up for Taiwan.
Now, on appropriations, Senator, are you on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, or is that a different one from yours?
Yeah, no, I'm not on an Appropriations Committee, Hugh. Sorry about that.
Oh, I thought you were. Well, then talk to me a little bit about whether or not a landlocked state like Kansas really cares about the fact that our shipbuilding has fallen apart. The Shipyard Act for $35 billion apparently isn't in the infrastructure compromise. It should be. The Navy is the number one deal going forward in great power competition, Senator. Are you persuaded of that?
Again, I think what we cannot do is look at any issue in a silo, looking at one issue by itself. Certainly our ports, our ability to export grains from the state of Kansas is very important to me. I think the Navy is one piece of the puzzle. I'm probably more concerned about cybersecurity and our southern border right now from a priority standpoint. How we battle China, I don't think this is necessarily just a matter of who has the most ships. I think it's much more complicated than that. I'm probably more concerned that we dominate in space and the satellites. And again, I'm going to kind of go back to the cyberspace issue as well.
Well, Senator, there's a great book by Captain Hendricks out there on the United States Navy and the constitutional obligation to stand one up. But we're supposed to be at 355 ships. We're not remotely close. I think we're now down to 282. And it's just not enough with rising sea power of China. We're going to end up in a global war for the free seas, and we're not going to have the assets that we need. Does the caucus ever get briefed on this? Because to me, it's the number one defense issue, like Taiwan is the number one threat issue.
We do talk about national security. We've not had a discussion in several weeks about the Navy in particular. But I just would caution, we spent, under President Trump, we spent more money than we ever had. We fully funded the military. Certainly our ships are in better shape today than we were before. And I just would caution you that, you know, is there ever enough money to satisfy the wants of the United States? So we have to prioritize money in the military just like you prioritize a budget. I understand your concern, but I don't know. It's kind of like, go back when I was growing up and we were trying to keep up with Russia's missiles. Eventually Russia had more missiles than we did, but we were more precise.
Senator, you and I are going to, next time you're back, we're going to spend the entire segment on the Navy, because, boy, could I not disagree with you more. I just could not disagree with you more, but we'll talk about it in the future. Dr. Senator Roger Marshall, go study up on that Navy. That's number one, and we have not, that was a Trump failure, actually. But we'll come back and talk about it another time. Thank you, Senator. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Walking on sunshine.
33 minutes after the hour, America. Hugh Hewitt playing happy music for Vladimir Putin because of his comments yesterday. Play them, please.
There is no happiness in life. There's only a mirage of it on the horizon. So, cherish that.
So we need more happy music for Vladimir Putin, and we need happy senators like Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee. What'd you make of that, Senator? Vlad seems depressed.
I think that Vladimir doesn't see Joe Biden as a threat. So he feels a little bit unleashed, and he's going to speak his mind. He thinks that Biden is weak. He thinks he can beat him. He is partnering up with China, Iran, North Korea. They're, in my opinion, the new axis of evil. And these guys feel emboldened.
100%. Now, Senator, you are on Judiciary, and Leader McConnell was my guest on Monday, and he commented that should there be a vacancy in the presidential election year of 2024, he would adopt the same rule, and he was leader again, and I hope you retake the majority in November of 2022, that he would adopt the same rule as obtained in 2016 when he didn't allow hearings or votes on Merrick Garland or anyone for that matter. He said no one would. Do you support him in that position?
Yes, I do support him in that position. And, we have worked diligently to get constitutionalists on the bench. We do not want activist judges on either the Supreme Court or the federal bench, and we're going to continue to work in that vein.
Now, Senator, I want to turn to the so-called infrastructure compromise drafted by the Gang of Ten, and to which now 10 Republicans have agreed. I asked Senator Marshall earlier, I will ask you, why would we do an infrastructure compromise if reconciliation is still on the table? They'll just take whatever doesn't get into the compromise and put it into the reconciliation.
Well, you're right about that. And they have the bill that they want, which is a complete redefinition of what infrastructure is. So, and the other thing, Hugh, I think you have to realize 10 people is a long way from 60 votes. And so they're pushing to get those 60 votes. I'm not going to vote for something that is going to disadvantage Tennessee, that is going to change the formulary and make them more of a donor state than they already are. I'm not going to vote for something that is going to put massive amounts of money into public transit when in Tennessee, the family minivan is more likely to be our mass transit, if you will. We have personal cars and trucks, and we're a logistics state with a lot of heavy haul, 53-foot trailers, 33-foot trailers that are hooked into a big rig. And people want to see roads and bridges repaired. They want to see rivers cleared. They want to see runways at airports functional. They want to see our railroads, which in Memphis we have all five Class A railroads that cross. There are only two cities in the country that have that. One is Chicago and the other is Memphis, Tennessee. So why would I vote for something that would disadvantage my state when it comes to rail and river and road and runway dollars? And the answer is I will not.
Now, Senator, even if they sweetened the deal for Tennessee, even if they gave you a complete cleanup of Oak Ridge, which is going to be very expensive, for example, or they put it on the infrastructure bill, I'd still say to you and even the senator, the Republican senator who got the best deal, wait a minute, the Republican Party does not want to get bait and switched, meaning, okay, we have a great compromise, that's wonderful, but the reconciliation, if they just go and stick paid child care leave for everybody and preschool mandatory money and money for critical race theory into the reconciliation, that's not a compromise, that's a swindle, and we're the marks.
Well, you're right about that. And we just have to keep the pressure on them, and we have to remind them they do not have a mandate. See, they're trying to act as if they have a mandate. They don't have a mandate. We've got an equally divided 50-50 ship, and they need to be reminded of that every single day. They are in an equally divided Senate, and Republicans need to act like that.
Senator, I want to switch to foreign affairs. I asked Senator Marshall, I'll ask you as well. Have you ever been to the island state of Taiwan? Do you plan on going to visit it?
Oh, I've been to Taiwan a couple of times and had hoped to get back over there in this summer and was not able to get over there when I had tried at Memorial Day. But we'll get back over that direction. We've worked closely with Taiwan, the state of Tennessee, has some participation with some business interest. I know there are some employers in the state that are closely tied to Taiwan, and we continue to support them and support their efforts and support their stand against China and support them being involved with the WHO because they're the ones that most effectively combated COVID from the start.
Now, many people are worried that President Xi Jinping, the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, will order an invasion of China sometime in the next 6 years. Indeed, Senator Cotton worries about the immediate aftermath of the Olympics in 2022 in Beijing because of what Putin did to Crimea and Ukraine after the Sochi Olympics in 2014. Should the United States be unequivocal in its commitment to come to the defense of Taiwan in the face of a hostile attempt to take it over?
They should be. They should stand solidly with Taiwan, just as we should be more forceful against the Chinese Communist Party when it comes to dealing with the genocide being committed against the Uyghurs, when it comes to what China has done to the Hong Kong freedom fighters, the violence that they have instigated in Tibet and Inner Mongolia. We should call them out more forcefully when it comes to the South China Sea. The Chinese Communist Party is really quite aggressive in their push to global dominance. And policymakers need to realize if you give China any opening at all, or as my grandmother would have said, if you give them an inch, they will take a mile.
Now, Senator, our first line of defense against the CCP is on the water in the United States Navy. We're down to 282 to 285 ships. China produces more warships in a year than in a month than we do in a year. And we're cutting back our shipbuilding in a year where we're spending trillions of dollars and we can't get the Shipyard Act through. Now, Senator Marshall wasn't very sympathetic to that. And we'll talk about that in the future. But what is your opinion of the Navy budget? Because every expert I have seen says it is radically underfunded. And the expansion and the plans are all about 2045 when they've got to be about 2023.
Well, you're precise on that. And I brought this issue with our nuclear fleet up with Secretary Austin last week when he came before us at SASC for a budget hearing. What they're doing is putting money into R&D, nuclear R&D. And this deals with our fleet, our our submarines. What they are not doing is putting money into maintenance and continuation and production, which is today. And, you know, they can talk about having a green Navy all they want to. Hugh, what we need is a blue water Navy that is going to be solid in its ability to defend and support the other divisions of the U.S. military.
And, Senator, this is one of the failures of the Trump administration. I like to give credit where credit is due, but the Trump administration produced a plan for a 355-ship Navy, but they actually didn't expand the Navy. In fact, it shrunk to a size lower than President Obama had projected for it. We have to spend money on ship construction. As you say, by the way, you're 100% right. Ship maintenance. We don't even, there are Virginia-class submarines that cannot get their annual or their regularly scheduled retrofitting and overhaul and life extension because there aren't any shipyards to do it at. That's a money problem. And we're spending trillions of dollars on stuff we don't need, and we're not spending it on the Navy.
Well, and you have to have the Navy because they are going to be working with your Air Force, with your Army, with the Coast Guard, with these different divisions. We're now working towards standing up a Space Force, which is the right thing to do, and President Trump was right about that. But all of this maintenance, and you mentioned the Virginia class. Well, Hugh, all of this maintenance is on a contracted basis. And many of these are 2 or 3 year contracts as these ships come in for this scheduled maintenance. It's like anything else. It's like any of your listeners that own a building, a commercial building, or own a home. They schedule maintenance and they don't look at it just as this summer we need to do this. They look at a plan. When are we going to need to replace appliances or repair the roof or do some foundation work? And that is the same way that the Navy deals with these ships. And then they schedule it and they go ahead and contract it. Well, if you eliminate this contracting authority because you're not putting the maintenance dollars then, well, you don't have ships in the water. You have ships that are in port.
100% agree. I hope any compromise on infrastructure includes the Shipyard Act, and I hope that you get the Navy fully funded. Senator Blackburn, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining me from the great state of Tennessee. I enjoyed being down there. And Duane, you've got to listen to the senator when it comes to planning maintenance. You can't do it all at once. Duane decided to redo his entire house at one time, and as a result, the brickwork is bad. And, you know, I'm always helpful in spotting these things, but there's a couple of bricks in the middle of his pattern that have to be redone. So I'm thinking about starting a Duane drive, a drive for Duane. It's not really legal, so I can't do it. But we can ask for thoughts and prayers for Duane, because to redo the brickwork is going to be expensive. And I know he did like my idea of having an open house and charging people for it. But unless they get that backyard fixed. But you shouldn't try and do everything at once, Duane. Did you just hear the senator? That she was talking to you about.
I heard the senator. No one has an idea what you're talking about.
Well, they're talking about the endless home improvement plan that you're on. You're like the Navy hasn't done anything to the Navy in 5 years. And you're like a Virginia-class submarine in dry dock.
I will have my house redone well before we get another hole in the water.
I don't know about that if you do the bricks the right way. The right way about your life and your body is this, ReliefFactor.com. Duane has a bad back from putting the bricks in the wrong way. He needs to take Relief Factor.
Duane has a bad back from carrying the hose for 20 years.
Yeah, I have got ReliefFactor.com right here. They've been a sponsor for almost 20 years, and that's the reason why I can go and do 8 miles after the show today. And today's a walking day, not a running day, but it's going to be a beautiful day in D.C., so it's going to be a great day to walk. I encourage you, America, get out there, get walking, get moving. And when I say that, you don't have to run a marathon. Talking to son number one yesterday, and he's decided he's going back to the triathlon business. He's back from deploying around the world, so now he's going to train for the triathlon again. And he got on his bicycle for the first time in 4 years. And he was Ironman ready, though they canceled his Ironman at the last minute at Lake Tahoe. They didn't do that again.
And he got on the bicycle for the first time in 5 years. He runs all the time, but that he's feeling a little different this morning. ReliefFactor.com, if that's you, if you're doing something new, putting in bricks the wrong way, riding a bicycle, ReliefFactor.com for you. Coming right back, Jim Talent on the need to go see Senator Marshall in Kansas ASAP. Stay tuned.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
That's our music for Vladimir Putin, who said this yesterday.
There is no happiness in life. There's only a mirage of it on the horizon. So, you know, cherish that.
Here, Jim Talent, senator from Missouri in the past. What'd you make of Vlad's dark and gloomy view of the world?
Well, I loved you tweeting out your interview with Cheney, where he said yes. He's got the soul of a KGB agent, which is true, It's one of the reasons I would not do these summits with Putin, and I certainly would not ask him for it, because when you go into these authoritarians and complain about the same thing over and over again, which is essentially what we do, said our leaders, I think we're being strong. Biden thinks he's being strong. But what Putin hears is, oh, I'm really hurting you, and you don't know what to do about it, right? So I liked us just to act.
I want to remind people what Dick Cheney told me in 2014. Putin's KGB. It struck me the first time I saw him. It's never changed, and certainly his conduct over the years supports that. Putin was a colonel in the KGB, the Soviet secret police. That's what he was and will be, I think, forever. That's how he operates. You know, I think Dick Cheney had his number, and when W first tried to work with him, by the time he left, he was at the Olympics in China and stared him down over Georgia. And since that time, I don't think we've actually had his number again.
Well, that's right. And just generally speaking, I mean, this is an attribute of Russian diplomacy. If you want to come to an agreement with them, you show them first that you can hurt them. And there's lots of things we could do. I mean, look, Putin plays a weak hand well, but this is not China, okay? And there's lots of things we could do to impose costs and consequences on him that we're not doing. And I think if we did that in a relatively short period of time, he'd be calling us up for a summit, and that's when you deal with them.
Right out of Nixon's The Real War. So, Senator, let's go to the Navy. I had a disturbing conversation with Senator Marshall earlier today. He's rather indifferent to the needs of the Navy, and maybe it's landlocked Kansas, but you're from Missouri. You got a river, but I mean, what's the deal with Senator Marshall? Doesn't every Republican senator know that the Navy is the front line here with China?
Well, I think the knowledge of that is migrating well out into the conference. I'm actually quite hopeful that the Republicans are going to take the line that we need the 3-5% real increase in the defense budget that Jim Mattis recommended, and that we should remember. The Strategy Commission, you know, the Edelman-Ruffhead Commission 2.5 years ago recommended, and Kath Hicks was a member of that commission. She's now the deputy secretary over at DOD. So I think it's going to be the Republican position. It needs to be the Republican position. But I will say this, you, that the members of the Armed Services Committee and the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee need to make an effort to be communicating constantly with the other members of the conference on this. Because to be fair, if you're not on that committee or foreign affairs, you're not dealing with this every day.
And agree.
You have to stick to your priorities in the Congress. And by the way, you know, I was the chairman of the Sea Powers Subcommittee. I had a lot of fun with that around Missouri. I got a lot of kidding about it.
Well, you know, good for you. And I wish every senator took a view that every United States is interested in places like Taiwan, because if we stop getting semiconductors from Taiwan, every American business will suffer. I've been asking, and I'll ask Senator Cruz at the top of the hour, have you been to Taiwan? Are you planning on going? What do you think Republican senators ought to be doing right now, Jim Talent, vis-a-vis Taiwan?
Well, I think going to Taiwan is a good thing. I think doing whatever we can to show support of a symbolic nature without, I mean, you can't change the diplomatic status. That's a major change in policy. I think that's a good idea. But I also think that the problem is, and you know this better than anybody else, certainly in the media, is that we're outgunned, outranged, and outmanned in Indo-PACOM. And we have to address the balance of power, and not 10 years from now, which is the problem with the DOD priorities. We got to do it right away, and that means we got to get more precision ammunition based in Indo-PACOM. We have to harden our own targets. We have to strengthen our ISR. There are things we could be doing, and we need to do it right away. Because I don't think, I agree with Admiral Davidson. I don't think the Chinese schedule is 2034. That's the only thing wrong with Jim Stavridis' book.
You mean his novel? And he agrees with that, by the way. It could be 2022. It could be after the Winter Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to be opportunistic. Now, the general view is that they don't yet have the shipping to land the number of troops they need to land. And I don't think they're going to go until they're confident that they can win, even if the United States intervenes. But they're working hard to remedy that shortfall. And
They are. And we need Senator Marshall to have a good dinner with you, Senator Talent. Hey, everyone, I'm coming right back. Stay tuned. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I'm playing happy music because Vladimir Putin is very depressed. Let's play that clip from yesterday's press conference.
There is no happiness in life. There's only a mirage of it on the horizon. So, cherish that.
So, I don't know why he's so depressed. It might be because he expected a fight and he didn't get a fight. I'm joined by Congresswoman Liz Cheney of the great state of Wyoming. Congresswoman, Vladimir Putin dominated yesterday. What was your assessment of that meeting?
Well, hi, Hugh. It's always great to be with you. And, I found that comment, probably pretty telling in terms of where Putin's mind is these days. But, look, I think, it was unfortunate that President Biden decided to sort of jump right in to go to this meeting with Putin. We kind of see this again and again where, U.S. presidents don't recognize that meeting with Putin, gives him a gift. It basically gives him a platform on the world stage. And I think that, Biden needs to be clear with his actions that there are things that Putin and the Russians are doing that we won't stand for. Certainly, the cyber attacks are among those, but actions matter, just going to have a meeting to have a meeting. There did not seem to be a lot of strategic thinking involved ahead of time or at the meeting, and I think there were some other things Biden should have been doing rather than that.
Congresswoman Cheney, I have been quoting last night on Twitter and this morning on the show an interview I conducted with your father in 2014. The quote is about Putin. He's KGB, the former vice president said. It struck me the first time I saw him. It's never changed. And certainly his conduct over the years supports that. Putin was a colonel in the KGB, the Soviet secret police. That's what he was and will be, I think, forever. That's how he operates. I don't think anything has changed since your father talked to me in 2014. Do you?
No, it certainly hasn't. And I mean, you can just look at what's happening today. With Ukraine, look at what's happening today with Navalny. Gary Kasparov, who's been a longtime Russian dissident, obviously chess grandmaster, has made the suggestion, which I agree with, that Biden ought to go meet with Navalny's family. Biden should meet with Zelensky. He needs to be thinking through what are the actions that we can take that demonstrate to Vladimir Putin
that he is isolated, that the way that he's conducting himself is not something that we're going to tolerate, and that, you know, his efforts to convey to the Russian people that Russia somehow has a place on the world stage with him at its head are going to be unsuccessful. And I think we need to recognize what he is, and you know, that's exactly right. He's a KGB agent.
I want to talk about one specific thing that the president did, and I try to be nonpartisan about my critiques of national security matters, but he handed him a list of 16 vital hands-off. I sure hope HughHewitt.com was on that list, because I don't want to be fair game for the Russian mafia, et cetera, but I'm afraid I'm not, and it's sort of like Dean Acheson leaving Korea out of that famous speech that Stalin misread. What did you make of that list?
Yeah, I saw the news coverage of that, and I think it's a mistake. I think it is basically sending a message of, you know, as long as you don't hit these people or hit these entities on this list, then, you know, you're not going to have a response from us. And I think it's much, much more effective for us to be very clear that there will be a response, that we do have the capability to conduct offensive cyber operations, that we're doing it, that we're not going to alert you that we're doing it, but that, you know, this is it's a new era, a new kind of warfare, and if you're going to engage in it against us, you had better be prepared for the fact that you know, we may well preemptively engage in those kinds of activities against you. But I think if you look at the whole list, you know, the fact that Biden lifted sanctions on Nord Stream, the fact that he extended New START for 5 years, you know, really. Actions matter, and it doesn't matter nearly so much what Biden says to Putin privately or publicly. It's how he conducts himself, what he does. And so far, the record is not one that I think will give Putin the concept that we're operating from a position of strength.
Congresswoman Cheney, I'm asking everyone who might be running for president in 2024, and I think that includes you. Have you ruled out running for president in 2024?
I don't have any announcement to make, Hugh, but I haven't ruled anything in or out, certainly.
All right. So I'm asking everyone with that answer this. Have you been to Taiwan? Do you plan on going to Taiwan? And do we need to abandon the policy of strategic ambiguity vis-a-vis Taiwan?
I've not been to Taiwan. I would very much like to go. Would hope to be able to do that soon. And look, I think that we have to be very clear that we will defend Taiwan. Taiwan is a thriving democracy. We've watched the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese government, make increasingly aggressive and hostile actions towards Taiwan. And, you know, we have to be absolutely clear that when we make a commitment for the defense of an ally, as we have with respect to Taiwan, that we will keep it. And I think that the policy of strategic ambiguity may at this point leave the Chinese government with a perception that should be incorrect, that, you know, somehow we won't defend Taiwan. I think it's very important for them to understand that we will.
There is also a perception growing out of the systemic underfunding of the Navy, and this was a failure of the Trump years, and I've said it many times. They had a great plan for 355 ships. They just didn't fund it. There was no production schedule, and now it's getting worse. The Navy is the front line in great power competition, Congresswoman. I don't know if you agree with that or not. And we are not funding the Navy, whether or not you agree with it. That's just objectively true.
It is true. And actually, what we've seen, I heard a little bit of Senator Cruz's the tail end of the interview there. We are actually seeing a cut in defense spending, if you look at it from the perspective of you know, real growth and inflation. We know we've got to have 3-5% annual real growth in the budget and that number is in order to be able to carry out the missions that were laid out several years ago in the National Defense Strategy. And so, you know, the National Defense Strategy of 3 or 4 years ago, the world has certainly changed since then. We've obviously had COVID we've had to deal with, and we've seen the Chinese in particular, but also the Russians make huge gains and make, you know, massive and significant investments across the board, including in their nuclear forces. So I think that, you know, we're right now going through all of the posture hearings in the Armed Services Committee, but people in Congress need to recognize, the American people need to recognize that the budget that the Biden administration has proposed for the Navy and for the other services and for nuclear modernization is insufficient to be able to defend ourselves, to be able to maintain the superiority that we count on to defend ourselves from our adversaries.
Now, Congresswoman Cheney, I also asked Senator Cruz about a David Bossie interview I did a week ago tomorrow, Friday. David Bossie is chairing the Republican National Committee on the Rules for the 2024 cycle, including the primary debates and the general election debates. He does not want the networks to control the Republican primary debates. He wants center-right moderators like myself, Ben Shapiro, Mary Catherine Hamm, Guy Benson. There are lots of them. Just so long as I'm on the list, that's all I care about. I'm selfish. But do you agree with him about the primary debates ought to be moderated by and questions posed by center-right moderators who are not, you know, ridiculously biased against the candidates? Do you think that would be a good modification?
Yeah, look, I haven't seen David's proposal. I think it's really important. Obviously, all the people that you named, I'm big fans of. I think they're terrific. And would all of them do a great job moderating debates? I do think it's unfortunate, though, that we've gotten into a place, and I think this is a much bigger problem we have for politics and society generally, a place where, you know, there are too few people like you, Hugh, too few people who are really going to look at issues and do it objectively. And, you know, think about what it means that, you know, as we look at our primary debates, we're talking about, are we going to have conservative or liberal moderators? I think it's certainly important that we not have moderators that are, you know, just there who, you know, who are there to make the Republican candidates look bad, there to score points with liberals. But I think it's, you know, part of a larger problem we have that, you know, we need to get back to the days where there was objectivity and frankly, you know, truth in reporting. And of course, you know, you and the people you listed reflect that, but there are too few of you these days, and I think that's something we really need to look at how we can change that as a country.
Both Ronna McDaniel and Bossie also are of the opinion that the Presidential Debate Commission either needs to be radically reformed or done away with in its control of the debates because it simply is not fair. Now, I think some of the criticism of it, to preface, is more unfair. I think Steve Scully would have been a fine moderator. But generally speaking, over the years, your father, George W. Bush, President Trump, they all get jobbed in this. They all get the short end of the deal. What should we do about the PDC? They have a monopoly and they're not up to it.
I mean, look, I was part of the team that negotiated the terms of the debates. Jim Baker led the effort for the vice presidential debates and presidential debates in the 2000-2004 cycle. And I think that, you know, part of it is you got to have somebody good who's negotiating the terms. And I think that, you know, it's important for whatever the Presidential Debate Commission's role is, that they play that role objectively. But at the end of the day, you know, in my experience, the complaints that go on when candidates are complaining about the terms or the rules of the debate, they're probably losing. You know, ultimately, the American people want the candidates to be able to stand up on the stage, explain why they are running for whatever office it is, and lay out their vision and their view for the future. And yeah, I sort of think a lot of this other stuff is background noise.
The very best debate in that whole sequence was between then-Senator Lieberman and your father in the first vice presidential debate, the only vice presidential debate in 2000. It was the best debate in the last 20 years. And it was one moderator, and I don't remember who it is. Probably McNeil.
It was Bernie Shaw.
Okay. There you go. I don't remember that. That's the way it should be.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the reasons that was such a good debate was because he let him talk. And so they went back and forth. It was a conversation. They really did lay out their views of the world. And that's how debates ought to be. It shouldn't be the moderators trying to score points and get attention. And, you know, I think that serves the American people best.
100% agree. Congresswoman Liz Cheney, thank you for joining me. Keep coming back.